ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय।
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 श्रीमद् भागवतम फोर्थ कैनो चैप्टर 7, द सैक्रिफाइस परफॉर्म्ड बाय दक्ष, टेक्स्ट 19.
Tadasvabhaya tesham.
Jyotayantya disho disha. Mushnams teja upanitas. Akshena stochavajina. Tada.
Svaprabhaya,
by his own effulgence.
Esha,
all of them.
Jyotayancha,
by brightness.
Disha,
directions.
Dasha,
ten. Mushnan, diminishing. Teja, effulgence.
Upanita,
brought. Tarkshena. Translation. Lord Narayan was seated on the shoulder of Stotra and the others present. Purport. A description of Narayan. His complexion was blackish, black beads, and his face was decorated with golden ornaments, such as bangles and bracelets. The face of Lord Vishnu, as described in this verse, appears. The Lord appeared in petals of a lotus flower, and lotus and miscreants, and the lotus flower and kansha are used to bless. The Lord is always ready for the protection of the devotees. Lord Vishnu is the proprietor of both the material and always situated in the spiritual world. Om Gyananjmanandasya Gyananjana Shalakaya Chakshurmilitam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha. Jai Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadha Shri Vasadi Go Bhaktavrinda. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare.
Hare Ram, Hare Ram, Rama Rama, Hare Hare.
We're nearing the conclusion of a very complex situation. The sacrifice of Daksha and the offense made toward Lord Shiva, the death of Daksha's daughter, Sati, the resultant reactions, and Lord Shiva has just cleaned up the situation his way. You might not approve of the way that he balanced the situation and made everything correct. But Daksha appreciated it very much. Even though Daksha had been killed, and under Lord Shiva's instruction to counteract the decapitation, the beheading of Daksha, Daksha received the head of a goat. Now you might say, what kind of outcome is that? But Daksha came to his senses. He was able to. Otherwise, you may. Lord Shiva, I never wanted my daughter to marry him. I just did it because my father Brahma twisted my arm. This Shiva, such a. He lost his own daughter. Hated the Yajna arena, polluted it. Lord Shiva himself is cleaning up the mess. Goat's head on Daksha's body. And he made other arrangements too. We want to focus on Daksha's reaction to someone with refined intelligence. But I showed myself for this punishment. You're so kind upon me. Could you have ever said such a thing? Speaking through the head of a goat. But Daksha was so sincere about it. And because he was able to finally see Lord Shiva with proper vision, the whole yajna became rectified to the extent of sacrifice wrongly. And his daughter, Sati, knew it. Oblations were offered for all the demigods, but not Lord Shiva. So, for Daksha's pet daughter, who was married to Lord Shiva, witnessing this was worse than death. Moreover, Daksha refused to recognize his daughter. He didn't pay her any attention. And that pulverized the heart of Sati. Lord Shiva, remember, had warned her, don't go to the yajna. There's going to be a big problem there. But what did Sati want to do? She wanted to dress up, silk saris, golden ornaments, and attend the family affair. Chit-chat with her sisters and her mother and all those things. She wasn't going to miss this yajna for anything. Although her husband warned her, Lord Shiva knew what was going to happen. He hinted, by your going, the result could be deathly. That was a big hint. But she was swaying back and forth. Should I listen to my husband, Lord Shiva? But all my sisters, my mother is going to be there. I haven't seen them for so long. Everyone's going to be dressed up for the yajna. It's going to be such a great social affair. I can't believe that my father will disregard me. So she was marching back and forth like a tree blown by the wind. Should I go? Should I not go? And meanwhile, what did she see overhead in the sky from her abode with Lord Shiva, where they reside? She could see the devas and their wives in their heavenly aircraft going to the sacrificial yajna. And she could hear the ladies, the wives, in those aircrafts talking, so that she couldn't resist. Life is often not so simple, all these social intricacies. But Sati wanted social intricacies. So after hearing all the chatter going on in the air above, Sati made up her mind. She stopped vacillating. She stopped going back and forth. And then, what did she do? She looked at her husband with a vision like she was going to blast him. Again, as Prabhupada points out, this is part of life, even in the highest heavenly planets. What to speak of on earth? So the men who are married, you know how this feels. When you get an icy look from the North Pole or the South Pole. That just is like a focused Brahmastra, nuclear weapon. So after giving Lord Shiva one of those, she left. And of course, she met her ruination. She arrived, only her mother and her sisters talked to her, but no one else talked to her. They were under such social pressure from Daksha. And Daksha, as we said, paid his pet daughter not the slightest attention. And then to make it worse, Daksha insulted Lord Shiva by not having any oblations offered to him in the sacrificial yajna. So Sati decided, I'll just give up my body. And then, as you know, the Bhutas, Lord Shiva's ghostly hordes, they ran wild and devastated the whole Yagya arena, ultimately killing Daksha. How, in such a situation, can Lord Narayan appear? That should be the question you're thinking about. How can Lord Narayan appear when all this has gone on? But all that went on because of a Vaishnava aparad. As you know, Vaishnavanam yata shambhu. Lord Shiva is the greatest Vaishnava. He was offended. But when Daksha corrected the offense to the extent that he even said, "Thank you for giving me a goat's head. This has brought me to my senses. This is your mercy." Things were balanced and rectified to such a great extent that Lord Narayan was able to appear. And of course, Lord Narayan is the master of everyone. Sometimes those from India bring up an example that Lord Ramchandra prayed to Lord Shiva. How many of you heard that? Yes. It's not in Valmiki's Ramayana. It's in, he is the servant of Lord Narayan. Now you're getting a description of Lord Narayan. This description can cause problems for anyone, no matter where you're from. Whether you're from Australia or you're from India. These specific descriptions of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. In India, everyone is accustomed to the pageantry. That means the colorful characteristics of all the demigods and these celestial personalities. So you might consider that these are the portals or doorways that lead to the impersonal behind it all. Yes, Shiva, yes, Brahma, yes, Indra, yes, Vishnu, or Brahman, behind it all. So it doesn't matter. Okay, Ganesh, Vishnu, Narayan, Shiva, whatever your fashion. Take your pick. Or you can worship them all. As many of you know, I call this the broad coverage insurance policy. Worship them all, you never know. One might be true. Especially when it comes time for taking exams, time for applying for your PR. You can't lose, right? You might win. So worship one of them, worship all of them. You just don't know what could happen. It's like winning the lottery, you know? So that can be the material conception. Colorful personalities and their associates behind it all. You're puzzled by all this, all these personalistic descriptions, forms, paraphernalia, associates. It's like from another world. So decades ago in the West, people would look down upon all this. Ah, these Hindu myths. They're just useless. They're just idolatry, idol worship. They're primitive. They're polytheistic. They believe in many gods. They don't understand the one true God. Of course, those who say that don't know anything about their so-called one true God, but anyway. They believe in many gods. So, it's a problem for them, for those born in the West. All these colorful descriptions, which are responsible for so much of the color and diversity that you see in India. So, as we said decades ago, such descriptions were regarded as complete mythology, which degrades people and stops the industrial progress of India. Because the people are so caught up in all this Vishnu, Brahma, Shiva, Ganesh, karma, Atma, they can't make any industrial advancement. That was said, of course, before India took over the world in terms of IT. So now, what is the Western notion? It's all myth, but these myths have instructive purposes. Even though it's myth, these myths have value for human behavior. We know it's not true, but that's not the point. The point, the Vaishnava stance. All of this is true. Now, what do you say about that? His complexion was blackish, his garment yellow like gold, and his helmet is dazzling as... How do you accept all that? Without our appreciating that we are completely helpless and in the dark, we'll have a tough time with Srimad Bhagavatam. Immediately, when you hear these specific... Your material intelligence wants to reject it. I never heard anything like that before. But just think, how much do we really know? Even about material existence, what to speak of spiritual existence? We're completely in the dark. We get a little imperfect knowledge. Particular scientific theories seem to be all in all, and they work. And then someone always discovers something beyond the current theory. To appreciate Srimad Bhagavatam means to start from the humble position that I have very limited knowledge. My senses are imperfect. All you can say is, if you're honest, this could be true. I don't know. Let me push on with it and find out. At least that much humility and honesty is required. But what right have we to just reject off? Have proper knowledge. When your senses are so limited, what can you say about anything? This is why pride drives material existence onward. We're suffering in the cycle of repeated birth and death, yet we know so much. Cars, get a bigger house, and life is successful. All the relatives praise you. Life is good. We're so easily flattered by the temporary waves of material happiness. Just like some little child. Yes, you're a little child. If someone gives you a piece of candy, you'll be very influenced, right? Maybe you did, yeah. So we think, well, he's like that because he's a little kid. But we're also like little kids. Just give us a little material happiness and we're so sure about what we know. This is how prone we are. This is how susceptible we are to losing our objectivity. No one in the waves of happiness and distress can be objective. Because the mind and senses are not controlled, we accept material happiness and insubstantiality of material happiness and distress. What makes us think that in a two-step operation here? Please think about this. Before you get to the point of accepting that Bhagavatam is perfect knowledge, you have to first come to the knowledge. Let's put that aside for now. Immediately, people want to challenge that point. It may have happened to you in your discussions. Oh, how do you know this knowledge is authentic? You say this knowledge is perfect. How do you know? Don't get caught up in that. First, the person needs to admit, first we need to admit that our situation is helpless, we're in the darkness of limited senses, imperfect senses, without contacting a source of perfect knowledge, we can't make any advancement in life. So first you have to settle that point. So don't be tricked by yourself or others, to move, try to move on. Bhagavatam. Sort of believe it. Before you get to that point, you have to master the preliminary position. This is not just poetry. It means need to contact a source of perfect knowledge if there's going to be any advancement in life. Otherwise, you have so many people saying today that life is meaningless, make your own. What is an easy way to understand about your limited imperfect knowledge? It's an easy way that strikes home with everyone. It's at the core of everyone's new material happiness. We do that. You may have never thought about it in this way, but we pursue material happiness because of limited knowledge. Have limited knowledge and act on limited knowledge. So the symptom of having limited knowledge is not that, oh, I can't understand what's going on. I can't understand how Daksha is father of all living entities. The symptom of limited knowledge is I pursue material happiness. Never thought about it that way, did you? Pursuing material happiness, yeah, it happens, you know, everyone's doing it, and you will get over it one day. By pursuing material happiness, it shows we have a problem with our knowledge. And in this way, you can also understand Krishna. Krishna never makes the mistake of pursuing material happiness. Why? Because his knowledge is unlimited. So in such a critical department, such a vital department as material happiness, you never makes the mistake of pursuing material happiness. Uninformed, uneducated persons try to say, oh, Krishna, or material bodies. So just by focusing on our pursuit of that perfect knowledge, then you can move to the next point of trying to understand Srimad Bhagavatam and how Srimad Bhagavatam informs. You have to get into it and follow its prescription. Even academic prowess may change. Similarly, when we're finally able to see Srimad Bhagavatam and see through it, everything changes. So the purpose of the sampradaya, the parampara, the line of empower you to see it. Now you might say, why can't I just do it on my own? But you see, because Krishna of the Supreme Personality Godhead, if you truly want to enter into the world of Bhagavatam and begin to verify it, you have to do it the Bhagavatam's way. That is what personalism means. I give this example so many times. If someone wants to understand you, you expect them to proceed your way. Not that they push themselves into your face and, I want to understand you, I want to see you. No, you have to build the relationship and gain the respect and trust of that person. And then that person begins to reveal more and more about himself or herself. In a personal way. That means according to how the person Krishna wants. Then Bhagavatam starts to come to life for us. And of course, we're reading about Lord Nara. Personal beauty and form, original personality God, that only he manifests. You see, all the forms of the Supreme Lord are perfect and complete, but they all don't manifest the fullness. This is hard for us to understand in Laghu Bhagavatamrita. Describes how there are pada avasta. There are three forms of the Supreme Personality of Godhead that are more, that manifest. Number one is Krishna. Lord Ramchandra shows a bit more than Lord Srigadeva. And of course, Krishna shows more completeness than Lord Ramchandra. And only Krishna, Rupa Goswami explains, can liberate demons completely by killing. Only Krishna can do that. The example given is first Hiranyakashipu, killed by Lord Nrsingadev. He had no understanding that this is Bhagavan. He thought, this is a strange creature, half man, half lion, that has resulted from karmic activity. This half man, half lion did some extraordinary fruitive karmic activities and therefore has such power. So no understanding. Therefore no liberation. Because he was not killed by Krishna and he had no understanding of Lord Nrsingadeva's position. But in his next birth, he was Ravana with unparalleled opulence and power. That shows you, that birth as Ravana shows you that any way you come in contact with Bhagavan, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, you benefit even when he kills you. So, as Ravana, there was such power, such majesty, extraordinary opulence. He was killed by Lord Ramchandra. What was Ravana's mindset? He wasn't so much trying to figure out who is Ramchandra. What was he thinking about? Sita. He couldn't get Sita out of his mind. Therefore, he never dealt with the reality of who Ramchandra is. He was just overcome by lust for Sita. He never understood this is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. He was too captivated by lust and anger. Next birth, even more opulence and power, Shishupal. Born in Krishna's own extended family. He had more power and opulence than even Ravana. He also started manifesting a personal absorption in Krishna, even from babyhood. Before he could even speak properly, Shishupal was blaspheming Krishna. He was showing that he's personally hung up about Krishna. Not like Hiranyakashipu and Ravana. He's showing from babyhood that he's got demoniac absorption, demoniac bhava of intensity. Rupa Goswami explains, and Srila Baladeva Vidyabhushan elaborates in his commentary. I hope those of you who are advanced in reading of Prabhupada's books will read Lagu Bhagavatamrita with the commentary by Baladeva Vidyabhushan. That's most important. Made available by the dear departed godbrother, Gopi Pranavanda Prabhu, published by the BBT. So, Shishupal was showing personal absorption in two things, Nama and Rupa. He was always chanting Krishna's name in utter disgust. And he was always thinking about the form of Krishna. He couldn't get the form of Krishna out of his mind. So that was the uniqueness of Shishupal before he was killed. And what was the exact, what happened? when Shishupal was killed. You know that Krishna dispatched his Sudarshan Chakra and decapitated, beheaded Shishupal in a way that not one drop of blood fell in the sacrificial arena. Shishupal's plan was what? I'll cause a big disturbance at this arena. He waited till the right moment where the yagya was at the point of no return. In other words, if there was any discrepancy, the whole yagya would be ruined. That's why Shishupal held off to that moment. He didn't start blaspheming at the start of the yagya. He waited right to the point of no return. And then he started waving his arms and speaking such blasphemy, causing such a commotion. His strategy was not simply to blaspheme Krishna, but his strategy was to cause a fight in the arena, and then bloodshed, and then the sacrifice is finished. But how did Krishna ruin his plan? The Sudarshan Chakra went through the air and cut off Shishupal's head in such a way that not one drop of blood fell. So surgically precise. Going through the air towards his head. Can give liberation to those who are killed. That is Rupa Goswami's point, which he takes many verses to document. But beyond that characteristic of being able to award liberation to those who are killed, those who have studied Nectar Devotion, attractive, unprecedented nature of his flute playing, which bewilders even demigods like Brahma when he's on the lotus flower, then the arena of the process. Just a brief moment. This is the... On the head of Narayan is the crown, and then the face is a lotus flower, and surrounding that lotus flower face is hair compared to bumblebees. And then below the face on the chest is what? Lakshmi Devi. And then on both sides there are actual swans. And then there are the earrings on the lotus-like face, which is surrounded by the bumblebees of black hair. The earrings are also like suns. And because Lord Narayan is wearing so much golden jewelry, it's like his arms are golden. It's amazing how we could say, oh, this is too specific, it's too particular. This must be mythology. Meanwhile, we would love to wear so much gold jewelry that someone would say, oh, your arms are golden. We're always ready to deny Krishna his opulence. That's why we're in the material world. But we want opulence for ourselves. We want, and of course, the fourth characteristic of Krishna, that's Deva's son. And the appearance of Narayan at the yagya made everything a success. Lord Shiva's pleased. Daksha has apologized, even accepting his goat's head as mercy. And Srila Prabhupada instructs us that sometimes devotees are in what seems to be materially difficult circumstances. But a genuine devotee accepts those circumstances as Krishna's mercy, saying, I should have suffered much more. It takes us some time to come to this point. This is a world of birth, death, disease, and old age. We recite that so often. It's a world of setbacks in that ultimately we have to give up this body. And so sometimes it can even seem that a devotee suffers. Why did Krishna allow this to happen? Why is Krishna doing this to me? At that point, we can remember Daksha's words. Thank you, I deserve much worse, but you're giving me your mercy. And that way, you turn every situation into a victory. This is the mystery of bhakti. You can transform even the greatest setbacks, the most excruciating situations, into an opportunity for making more spiritual advancement. And then, as Lord Brahma says in his famous prayer, you become a suitable candidate to inherit, going back to Godhead, just like a good son becomes a suitable candidate to inherit the wealth of the father. So this is one of the greatest mysteries of bhakti, and Daksha is demonstrating that. We can't blame Krishna for the tragedies of this world. Krishna did everything to keep us from coming here. And so we have to accept the responsibility for our decision, our misuse of independence by entering the material world. So that takes me. It takes a while. In the beginning, when we take to bhakti, we just want relief from material suffering and we want material benefits. Oh, Krishna, give me this. Give me that. Protect me from this. Protect me from that. It takes a while of advancement before we start moving toward what is real love. And real love begins with taking ownership for our situation. I took this on by my own will, by misusing my independence. Krishna didn't force me to come to the material world. In fact, we practically force Krishna to send us, hard as it is to believe. So as we advance in bhakti, we begin to take ownership of our existential situation. And then real humility can begin. In a deeper way, we spoke about how humility begins by accepting our helpless situation, unable to understand what's going on around us. A matter of time before material nature embarrasses us yet again. It's a concept that I loved when I first read Srila Prabhupada's books, and of course continue loving it now. The whole concept of being embarrassed by material nature. Everyone hates to be publicly embarrassed. But that is what material nature does to us. We don't learn. So first, we accept our helplessness, and then we can recognize the need for perfect knowledge. And with that perfect knowledge, we start to take ownership of our situation. I chose this mess. I deserve worse. But Krishna, through any situation, is able to give me the best. And that's what Daksha said to Lord Shiva. And as a result, because the situation became all auspicious, all the aparads, the offenses were cleared out. Everyone followed Lord Shiva's instructions to tidy up the catastrophe. As a result, Lord Narayan appears. And we're getting such a detailed description of Lord Narayan. Any questions?
Explanation about form. Thank you, Maharaj, for explaining such a beautiful form of Krishna and how we should actually understand Srimad Bhagavatam and placing ourselves. When you were talking about the scene where Daksha, Yajna got stopped and how Vishnu had to appear, you were saying that we should understand why Vishnu had appeared, and I didn't get an answer to that. I mean, you said it's important.
Because the Yajna was rectified, everything was going on perfectly.
Okay.
Daksha had counteracted his offense. Lord Shiva was satisfied. By pleasing the devotee, Krishna becomes most pleased. And Lord Shiva is the greatest devotee. Okay? Yes?
Alexa.
Now,
Guru Maharaj, you said that Lord Ram did not worship Lord Shiva. But I'm not able to reconcile this with Rameshwaram, like, you know, the place, there's the Shivling and the street.
The so-called pastime of Lord Ram worshipping Lord Shiva is not in Valmiki's Ramayana. That's all I'm saying. As for what others do, I'm not commenting on that. Okay? Because often that's brought up, that just see, Shiva is superior to Ram. But it's the lila, that so-called pastime is not there in Valmiki's Ramayana. Yes.
In the discussion, we said that Hiranyakashipu did not know that Narasimhadev and could not be liberated. But we also hear that Prahlad Maharaj's prayers that 14 generations were liberated. So how do you...
It happened. It happened after Shishupal. Yeah. Also, the situation of Jayan Vijay, the gatekeepers in Vaikuntha, is special. They did not fall from the spiritual world, so to speak. What happened, as explained by Baldev Vijayabhushan, is that they were hearing discussions in the palatial setting of Vaikuntha, Lord Narayan's throne and Lord Narayan's palace. They heard talk about how when the Lord comes to material world, he kills demons. So they got interested. That sounds really amazing. We'd like to check that out. So according to Srila Baladeva Vijayaprasad, they had a desire to participate in the pastime. So therefore, they were given that opportunity. And yes, Prahlad Maharaj's benediction was fulfilled after the final birth as Shishupal. They were free from material existence. Yes?
Maharaj, you were mentioning that belief about not pursuing material happiness. But we see in our life that even though we hear about this every day and we read from the Srimad Bhagavatam that pursuing material happiness is very transient, it's temporary, but we still keep pursuing it despite having that knowledge. It still gives us happiness if we get some, you know, achievements in our material life, or our children do well in something, or we get a new house or something like that. It still gives us happiness. So how do we, as practicing devotees...
Everyone can hear? She's saying that, okay, we hear the message of Bhagavatam that material happiness is transitory and pursuing it is a result of limited knowledge. Meanwhile, though, in our daily life as practicing devotees, we still are affected by material happiness. So she made a whole list of various householder delights. Not only children, but the children's achievements. And the house gets bigger, and advancement in the workplace. And so she's saying, undeniably, for many, you'll feel happy about this. Let's understand the gradual progress of bhakti. It's a career. So devotees are work in progress. It's not that you have to aggressively repudiate any feelings of material happiness. Our life is based on increasing attraction for Krishna. And by increasing the attraction for Krishna and sacrificing his service, gradually the attachment to material happiness and distress slides away. So we're not just day in and day out battling, I don't want to be happy, I don't want to feel happy. Or I don't want to be affected by distress, I'm not going to let this distress affect me. We are trying to increase our attachment for chanting Hare Krishna. We're trying to increase our attachment for the Venu Madhurya, the Leela Madhurya, the Rupa Madhurya. What's the fourth one?
Leela
Madhurya. And gradually these things slide off. This is why we chant Chaito Darpana Marjanam. The mirror of the consciousness gradually becomes cleansed. So we're a work in progress. And as you're progressing in bhakti toward the ultimate destination, you see road signs telling you you're getting closer, you're getting closer. So it's not like it's all or nothing. I'm a complete Shuddha Bhakta, complete pure devotee, or else forget it all. No, there is a gradual increase. And you see the signposts along the way. Those signposts are given in the Shastra. Just like when you first came to Melbourne, what year was that? 2005. Probably the winter freaked you out, right? Oh my goodness. What has my husband done? Right? How can I ever live here? But now, after 13 years, you're accustomed to it, right? It may annoy you, but it's not like you're devastated about it, right? So similarly in bhakti, gradually you learn how to handle the comings and goings, matra sparsha stakonte ashitoshna shuka dukkata. You learn how to handle the comings and goings of happiness and distress, and you're not destabilized. So we have to stop thinking in terms of either or, all or nothing. Instead, there's a gradual development. Bhakti is a career. The more you increase your attachment for Krishna, the more you'll see those other things slide away. And that confirmation is coming from Krishna in your heart. Krishna is letting you see the process is working. Keep it up. This is the glory of devotional service. Anything else? Yes.
Thank you, Maharaj, for coming to class. Maharaj, we heard about that Satyadevi was swaying back and forth between our own desires and the saintly advice that she had received. So in our personal lives, we have honor for the saintly advice. We accept the protocols of healthy lifestyle, not to do it, what to do. But personally, I feel there's this sense of inertia in life and not able to gather the momentum to actively work towards the saintly advice. There is this honor, there is this understanding not to do these things would ruin us, so let's not engage with them. There is honor for the saintly. Where do we gather the momentum to apply the saintly advice?
Well, first of all, it's glorious that someone's even considering to follow the advice. That's such a rare thing in this age of darkness, that someone's actually considering, I should do this. That's a great step forward. And continue with that desire in proper association, and gradually you'll see the flower of bhakti bloom. It may take longer than others, but we should not lose hope. Stick to it. It's a glorious thing just to consider. I should be doing this. We don't want to underestimate that. that beginning, that's the beginning of Shraddha. Just like it was here in Melbourne, where Srila Prabhupada pointed out that if you offer someone one of his books and they just take it in their hand and, oh, this is looks very wonderful. They show some slight appreciation, but no thanks, give it back to you. Just that is the beginning of Shraddha, faith. Enough to give them a human form of life in the next birth. So this process of bhakti is so powerful we actually can't conceive of its full depths. We just know that pure bhakti can even conquer Krishna. So therefore we don't want to minimize someone's thinking, I hear, but how can I get to the point of applying? We want to congratulate them for that and then give them help so they can apply. All right. Thank you very much. Hare Krishna.